This is the MBN Podcast. Here are your hosts, Nathan Schwartz and Jack Suzanne.
Welcome to the 104th episode of the Maryland Baseball Network Podcast. I'm Nathan Schwartz, Jack Suzanne across the table from me here in the studio. And Jack, another up and down week for the Dirty Terps.
Yeah, up and down is a good way to describe it. I think everyone knew it was going to be a tough ask out in Lincoln against Nebraska. They're a really, really good team. It was always going to be tough. But there's solace, I think, taking one there. And, of course, the midweek against James Madison, a really, really nice one.
Yeah, going into this, this was the week that we had circled on the calendar of being the week that could really help Maryland or really at least boost Maryland's chances, both Big Ten-wise and RPI-wise, going into the end of the month of April and into those last couple weeks of the season ahead of Big Ten tournament play, turned out to be a very important one for Maryland in terms of just keeping things afloat. They take one of three in Lincoln. They take the midweek on the road in Harrisonburg. The RPI is 43rd right now, so it has improved from what it was, but still something left to be desired after those two losses, especially the one on Sunday that was just a complete disaster.
Yeah, and like you said, the RPI, it took a bit of a boost. Obviously, everyone would have liked for it to take more of a boost. But I think at this point, it's just about, you know, going out and winning the games you can. Obviously, a big weekend coming up against Illinois, which we'll touch on later. But yeah, I think disaster was averted this weekend and this week, which is what's most important at this point in the season.
Yeah, a 1-3 week really would have been problematic for the Terps, but they are able to take 2 of 4 throughout the week, and we'll start with Friday night at Nebraska, and this one was a 6-3 loss for the Terps. It was 6 runs on 13 hits for the Huskers, 3 runs on 7 hits for Maryland. The big storyline going into this one was Kenny Lippman not making the start on a Friday for the first time this season. Logan Koster slid in from that Saturday spot, and he only goes 4 innings. He really got roughed up in that 4th inning specifically, giving up 4 runs. He gave up a leadoff homer in the 3rd and a leadoff homer in the 4th. Maryland's offense was very minimalistic as well. A solo homer for Chris Hakopian in the 3rd, and then 2 runs, both on RBI base hits for Jacob Orr and Michael Iannazzo in the 4th inning. But that was it. The 3rd and 4th innings were the only 2 innings that any runs were scored in this baseball game. It could have just been those 40 minutes and we could have called it a day, but instead we had to play the remaining 2 hours of this baseball game. But going back to what I said, Koster struggles, goes those 4 innings, giving up the 6 runs, all of them earned on 9 hits, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts, and then Brett Sears on the other side for Nebraska. We talked about this last week. One of the best pitchers, if not the best pitcher, in the Big Ten.
Oh, he is the best pitcher in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And this year, at least, he's been by a country mile.
Yeah, he proved why. He goes 7 innings, giving up 3 earned runs on 7 hits, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts. And even though that's an outstanding start, that's a quality start, that's what you would take from your starting pitcher every single week if you're any team at any level of baseball. But that was actually Sears' worst start this season, if you can believe it or not.
Sears is so crazy to me because he doesn't do anything that's like, this is his one defining factor as a pitcher. This is what makes him great. He knows how to get outs, and obviously that's the most important quality as a pitcher. But like, it's one of those weird phenomena that you can't really explain. But he's really good, and I couldn't tell you what makes him really good. You probably could get a better look at that. But, you know, this was going to be a tough one for Maryland from the start. Everyone knew that, especially on Friday. And Sears really proved why. But I do want to give credit to the 2 relievers that came in. Tristan Sarcone hadn't pitched in a while. But he came back from his little injury. He's all good to go. 2 innings, 3 hits, 3 strikeouts. And then Andrew Johnson has been doing well in this type of role all year, just keeping Maryland around in games. 2 innings, 1 hit, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. Great outings from both of them. Obviously, Koster's start left a little bit to be desired, but this is a game that Maryland, it was just one of those games where you were going to be in trouble from the start.
Yeah, and the rough thing about this one is they got to Brett Sears. They did what they needed to do, but there was just a couple of base-running mistakes in this game. You look back to the fourth inning. Sam Honar tries to stretch. He was at first base. He goes from first to third. He did a little hesitation step at second base before heading to third on what was a Braden Martin single, and he gets thrown out at third base. If he stays at second, you get another run on that board in the fourth inning to make it 4-2. And then in the sixth inning, with two runners on, one runner on second, one runner on first, and one away, Kevin Keister gets picked off at second base. And later in that at-bat to the batter, I believe it was Orr, he walks. So instead of having bases loaded with only one out, you had a runner on first and second with two outs. And then that just changes the whole complexion of the inning. And so when you look at those base running mistakes, when you're facing a top-tier arm in Brett Sears, those are just mistakes that can't happen.
And that's Nebraska as a team. You're going to have to play pretty much mistake-free baseball against the Huskers, because that's just how good they are. And Maryland's really going to have to do that throughout the season. I don't really have much else more on Friday night. Just a tough loss. But a day where they didn't play any more mistake baseball was Saturday. And boy, that was a big one.
That was an outstanding win. And we can hop right into this. So you lose on Friday, and then Saturday was a lot of question marks, because now Logan Koster is out of the Saturday role. Who's going to be that extra arm in the rotation? Because Jimmy Jackson and Matt Swope confirmed before the weekend that they were going to keep Joey McManus in the Sunday slot. So going into Saturday afternoon, we had no idea who was getting the ball for Maryland. And it turns out it's going to be Omar Melendez making the start. But before he can even take the mound, Maryland's offense started to light up. And we'll start with the first pitch of this baseball game. Mason McConaughey, the right-hander for Nebraska, sporting the second-best ERA in the Big Ten, throws a fastball, first pitch to Eddie, middle, and he sends it over the left field fence. And this really just set the tone for what this game was going to be for Maryland. And Eddie said he was just pissed off about the game before and what's been going on over the last couple weeks. It's been a lot of losing for Maryland recently, but he took matters into his own hands and got Maryland started the right way.
Yeah, it was a really funny game, Saturday was, because, like you said, McConaughey, they were talking about it on the Nebraska public television broadcast about how good McConaughey's last outing was. I think he went like 7 shutout against Rutgers. Like, oh, expect him to do something similar today. They'd clearly pre-taped their open and didn't start it in time, because it was still playing while they had the video of Eddie crushing that ball to left field. It was one of the funnier live TV moments I've seen. But yeah, I mean, can't ask for a much better start than a first pitch homer, can you?
No, you can't. Eddie would finish this game 3-for-5 with a couple of ribbies. But it wasn't just that in the first inning for Maryland either. Jacob Orr with a 2-strike, 2-out, 2-run single to score Honar and Chris Hakopian gives Omar Melendez 3 runs of run support, and that's all he would need. He only gave up 2 earned runs in his entire outing, which was 6 innings, 6 hits, those 2 earned runs. Only walked 1 batter and struck out 6 across 99 pitches. This was the Omar Melendez that we were expecting when he transferred over from Alabama State, and I think the Omar Melendez that all the fans were expecting coming over from Alabama State. He didn't earn his way into the starting rotation. He started, this was only his second start of the year, by the way. So the fact that he was able to readjust back to a starter role and have this much success, absolutely amazing. And you got to tip the cap to the effort by Omar.
Yeah, and Melendez is such an interesting pitcher to look at, because he's not going to blow you away with velocity. That's, you know, a well-known thing at this point. He's going to throw, you know, mid-80s or thereabout with his fastball, but his changeup and his curveball are unbelievable. And when they're working, the way they should be working. They're complementing each other like they were on Saturday. He's going to win a lot of games with that. It's just a matter of, you know, getting it. This isn't Alabama State. This isn't the SWAC. This is the Big Ten. It's a lot tougher level, so, you know, hitters are going to find those mistakes a bit better. But if you're not making those mistakes, they can't find him. And Omar didn't really make too many mistakes on Saturday. And, of course, the offense helped him out a ton.
Yeah, and the offense did not stop there with Hakopian and Orr in that first inning. Two more runs in the second inning via a wild pitch that allowed Devin Russell to score, and then Chris Hakopian with a sacrifice fly scoring Eddie.
It's like the least cool way to score runs. I know. But hey, it works.
It works. And whatever you're able to do, because Maryland is obviously struggling to win games over the last couple of weeks, and so they're going to take runs any way they can get them. And then it was kind of dormant for the next couple of innings. One run in the fourth thanks to an RBI ground out for Eddie. That's where that second RBI comes into play. Melendez gives up a homer to Ben Columbus, who, my goodness, had one of the best weekends I've seen all season long for one player on the opposing team. He was 3-for-3 on Friday, and then Saturday he was 2-for-3. I don't remember his exact stat line from Sunday, but I know he did have an RBI hit in that game. So RBIs in each of the three games and at least 6 hits for Nebraska's first baseman.
Wasn't he like struggling to get in the lineup even before that series?
So he hadn't even appeared in 20 games yet.
Insane.
Going across
Insane.
The first 2 months of the season before this weekend, he had been mashing the ball over the last 10 games or something like that. I think it was right around a 500 average over the last 10 games. That's Nebraska's overall 10 games. He hadn't been in all those games, but still producing well. And then something just clicked, and he was sensational for Nebraska. But going back to the Maryland offense, it's a 6-1 lead going into the top half of the sixth inning, ironically. And that's when the long ball came back into play. Elijah Lambros takes a off-speed delivery over the center field fence. His 5th home run of the year made it 8-1, and then later in that inning, Sam Honar, a 3-run jack, no doubter to right center. And funny story to pair with this, Jack, you were able to give me this nugget during the broadcast, to which I shared, but Sam's family usually travels to all of these road series, and it's his last year of college baseball, so it only makes sense that the family is able to share this experience with Sam in his one and only year with the Terps. But his dad, Jack, was sitting out in right center. I don't know if he was staying out there the whole game or just whether exploring. He was just roaming around, because you can walk around the entire facility there
cool
at Haymarket Park.
There.
Yeah, it's awesome. But anyway, for this particular at-bat, he was in right center field. And I don't know if he saw the scouting report of the pitcher or something, or was expecting a home run, but sure enough, Sam hits one to the right center field concourse, and you can look on the clip who's running after the ball. Sam's dad, Jack, and he winds up with that baseball. He tweeted at Terps Baseball, and Jack, he sent me that tweet, and I was able to share that information on the broadcast on Saturday. Just what a moment.
That's not so awesome.
Not only to extend that lead to double digits, at the time made it 11-1, but then to have your dad get the baseball, wow.
So first off, the ball was absolutely smoked. I think we need to state that really quickly, because the thing was destroyed. You were there, obviously. You know it better than I do. But just seeing it on Big Ten Plus, that thing was crushed. But just so, like, so cool. I mean, that's one of those things, like, if you get your son's homer in Little League, that's pretty cool. But, like, at the college game, it's pretty rare for that to happen. And I hope Mr. Honar keeps that ball somewhere on the mantle at their home.
Yeah, especially considering that a lot of these college stadiums don't have seats
exactly.
in the outfield, at least in the Big Ten, for that matter, in which Sam has been playing that conference for 3 years now. So to have that chance to get the baseball and then to actually do it was something special for the Honars. And then going back to the game itself, of course, Columbus strikes again, a sacrifice fly in the bottom of the sixth off of Melendez, and Omar's able to get the last batter he faces to strike out. It was the bottom of the sixth inning, and he gets Will Walsh, ironically, who started the game on Sunday for Nebraska, to strike out swinging, and that was pitch number 99. They had it wrong on the scoreboard, so I said pitch number 100 on the broadcast. But who cares? What a day for Omar Melendez. We already said the final line. If he can continue to be like this for Maryland, they're going to be in a great spot moving forward.
Yeah, and we can't promise that he will continue to be. We obviously hope he's going to be, and know he can be, but we can't promise that he will be. But just what an outing, and credit to him. But also credit should go to Kenny Lippman.
Absolutely.
Because to be demoted from the Friday night role to the bullpen, it's tough. You know, there's no way to sugarcoat it. It's not fun. But credit to him. Great outing on Saturday. 3 innings, 1 hit. The walks are a bit concerning at 4, and the 1 strikeout. No runs given up. But so much credit to Kenny for bouncing back, having a great outing. And then going forward a little bit, he had another great outing on Tuesday against James Madison, which we'll talk about a bit later. But yeah, so much credit to Lippman for being able to come in and get the job done on Saturday.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at it from the coach's perspective in terms of Lippman, and I was talking with Jimmy Jackson ahead of Friday's game, and I just had to ask him the question, what was the motive for the change? And he told me, well, you know, it's not so much about what Kenny did or didn't do, but just what we need as a team right now. And he said they need that strikeout stuff out of Kenny in the bullpen and the ability to give length in that bullpen role. They can figure out somebody to throw into that starter role. But with the injuries at the time to Tristan Sarcone, who has worked his way back, Garrett French is injured and has been for the greater part of the last 2 months. And then you look at James Gladden, a guy who was expected to come in and play a significant role in the back end of this bullpen, and he's out for the season with Tommy John. So that's 3 injuries to your bullpen, and it had just been a taxing couple of weeks for Maryland's pitching staff. And so coach told me that it's just what the team needed to do at that time. It's nothing Kenny did or didn't do as a starter. They're more so looking at the potential and looking back of what he did last year as a reliever and hoping it translates into the rest of this season. And we'll see how it plays out. Of course, there's nothing set in stone. Maybe Kenny works his way back into the rotation at some point late in the season. I wouldn't bank on that. I think it's going to be Omar's spot as long as he continues to produce. And we only have 4 weekends left in the season. So I'm sure there will be a tight leash considering Maryland's standings in the Big Ten tournament and on the NCAA tournament bubble right now. But still, if they're able to get the performances from Melendez and Lippman that they did on Saturday throughout the rest of the season, I think they'll be in a good shape moving forward. And that was really all from Saturday's game. Of course, Lippman gets the final 9 outs. You mentioned the walks, but he's able to work around that. Melendez moves to 3-1 on the year. Lippman gets his first save of the season, his 2nd in a Maryland uniform. And then McConaughey falls to 4-3 after giving up that first pitch home run to Hacopian and the 5 earned runs over just 1 inning and 2/3. And that was really the biggest part of this game, in my opinion, was McConaughey, the starter, not even lasting through the 2nd inning.
Yeah, I mean, McConaughey guy, especially after the outing he had, where he just, it went really well against Rutgers and then, for whatever reason, didn't work against Maryland. But that's what this offense can do, and I think for Maryland it was an all right performance.
All right.
There we go.
There it is.
Now I'm ready to go, baby. Come on.
All right, we're cooking now, and
now we got to talk about
Nebraska cooking. So yeah, this one was ugly on Sunday. 16-4 was the final. The Huskers quadruple Maryland's score in a run rule victory. Keep in mind, the run rule is not a actual rule in the Big Ten. If it's agreed upon before the game due to travel purposes, or just agreed upon in general between the two teams before the weekend to save arms and whatnot, especially on a Sunday, you'll see it a lot of times. That it can happen, and that's what happened in this game. We had a travel curfew. We had a drop dead time in place in case the game were to go long. And this game actually went longer than the game on Friday night. That was 6-3. And of course, with all the runs, I'm pretty sure you can put two and two together as to why this game went longer. But this was just overall a extremely sloppy game from Maryland, both at the plate, on the mound, in the field. Just nothing was going the right way for Maryland. And I think, at least I was thinking this in the moment, Joey McManus, the first couple of batters, was doing a pretty good job, was having a couple of first pitch balls, was struggling to find the zone a little bit in that first inning. But he's got a full count with two away, a runner on base. I believe the runner was on second or third. And he's just one pitch away from getting out of the inning. And Tyler Stone, the batter from Nebraska, is hitting from the left side. He continues to foul off pitch after pitch after pitch in this at-bat. Gets probably, I think, to the ninth pitch in the at-bat. And then Joey leaves one up, and Stone sends it over the fence after this prolonged at-bat to where he's fighting, Joey's fighting, they're going toe-for-toe, pitch-for-pitch, and then Stone wins it in that big of a way. It kind of felt like, yeah, just as Saturday was going to be that kind of game for Maryland, it was going to be this kind of game on Sunday.
And I was watching it, and it was just so deflating. As deflating as pretty much any first inning moment can be.
Yeah.
When you're battling so hard. He was pitching well. I mean, it was a 1-2 count. Eventually got to 3-2. But just an incredible at bat, obviously, by Stone. And, you know, exactly the way you want to end it. Credit to Kevin Keister for hitting the homer in the top of the second as the Terps tried to fight their way back. But then the defense just sort of unraveled on itself. And then the pitching started to unravel, and then everything started to just go goodbye.
Yeah. So it was those two runs in the first, three in the second for Maryland after Kevin Keister hits a home run, his first one in a couple of weeks. It was a pass ball and then an RBI single for Caden Brumball, an RBI single for Riley Silva. Then nothing in the third, and then wheels started to fall off the bus in the fourth with a five spot. It was a Jacob Orr throwing error after an infield single by Joshua Overbeek, then an RBI triple down the left field line for Caden Brumball, which really should have been a double and an error on Jordan Crossland in left field. Another RBI single for Riley Silva, which should have been another Jacob Orr error, and then there was a throwing error by Eddie at first base. So really, the four errors in this game for Maryland don't even paint the whole picture, because they probably should have had five or six in this game, but the Nebraska home scoring did us a little bit of a favor right there. And then, as I mentioned earlier, Ben Columbus had that RBI single in this game. He was 1-for-3. So 3-for-3 on Friday, 2-for-3 on Saturday, 1-for-3 on Sunday for the first baseman. Cole Evans with an RBI single in the fourth. Brumball with another RBI hit, this one a double in the fifth. And then in the sixth inning, man, Hunter Baines comes in after Duke McCarron leaves with a what appeared to be a collarbone area related injury.
He's feeling fine, by the way. I talked to him. He's feeling all right.
Yeah, whether it's the neck or the shoulder, or the collarbone, whatever it was, he had to come out of the game. And then Hunter Baines makes his first collegiate appearance and did not go well, unfortunately, for Hunter. He doesn't record an out. He walks all four batters he faces. And gives up all those runs came around to score. So he gives up four earned runs on zero hits. Riley Silva had a sack fly in the inning. Garrett Anglin with a two-run single. Maryland got three runs in the sixth, but it was 16-4 at the end of the top of the seventh inning. And it honestly caught me a little bit off guard when Eddie flew out and then the Nebraska players all just started running towards the mound. And I was like, what is going on? And then it hit me, of course, with the travel and everything, that the run rule was in place. So a 12-run defeat for the Terps. They dropped the series, their fourth straight Big Ten series loss after winning the opening Big Ten series of the year at home against Michigan State. It's just another one of those demoralizing losses, but I don't think it was necessarily a panic loss.
No,
it was just
not
the nature of how it happened. I think you would have felt good definitely winning one in Nebraska with the way they're playing right now. Of course, you would have loved to take two or three or even sweep. But there's still nine Big Ten games left to be played, and Yes, they're on the outside looking in of the Big Ten tournament bubble right now at ninth, but there's still an opportunity here where you can finish above 500 in conference play, especially with those three games at the end against the Nittany Lions.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the season is not over.
Absolutely not.
The season is far, far, far from over. Maryland's still good. They're still a good team. And like losses like this won't define Maryland. A performance like this won't define Joey McManus, won't define Hunter Baines. Baines is still a really good pitcher. Hasn't had too much of a chance to show it yet, but
has a plus side fastball.
Yeah, his fastball
a lot of
is
good
really
stuff
good.
For Baines. It when just wasn't can, finding the zone. Yeah,
once he finds his command, which he will at some point down the line, he's going to end up being really good. But yeah, it's you know, this again, this performance just does not define Maryland or any of the players who didn't have their best games in it.
Yeah, one thing I'll say on Baines, he had to come into this game without throwing a single warm-up pitch because of Duke McCarron only facing his second batter when he came out due to injury. Baines just came out of the bullpen completely dry and then took, of course, his time to throw the warm-up pitches. But it's a tough spot for any pitcher in that scenario. But for Baines, it was his first collegiate appearance as well in front of 5,000 people. So that I couldn't imagine the feeling in that moment for Hunter, but he was able to just, you know, throw it to the side. Baseball's going to happen, and he'll get more opportunities as the season goes on. So that'll take us into Tuesday, where Maryland was able to get back on track. It was Jimmy Jackson's return to Harrisonburg Eagle Field at Veterans Memorial Park. I had the pleasure of calling a couple of games there last summer with the Charlottesville Tom Sox of the Valley Baseball League in the summer. And that's a great stadium.
Great venue.
Great venue. Homey feel to it. Not a whole lot of seats, but enough to definitely field a good crowd. Good press box, good environment. And you have the highway right behind as well. You have the ability to sit in the outfield in some spots. But enough about the field. Let's talk about what
Let's
happened
talk about
on the
some
field.
Homers, baby.
And yeah, Jack, I'll let you do your yapping, of course, because I was in Nebraska calling those three games, and you were in Harrisonburg calling this midweek.
Yeah, so Evan Smith got the start, found out that was going to happen on Tuesday, and I think everyone was pretty excited. Smith's had a pretty good freshman season so far, struggled a bit against Nebraska, but has had some really good outings, especially against Georgetown and Northwestern. So he was good. 2 1/3, 5 hits, 3 runs, all of them earned, 2 walks and a strikeout. I think they might have left him in a bit too long. I think they should have taken him out after 2. He started to struggle a bit in the third. The first inning, the top of that James Madison order is so, so, so good. Ryan Dooley, Fenwick Trimble, NBN podcast name draft shout out.
Yes.
And Mike Mancini. That top three can compete with anyone. And they really flex their muscles in the first with Trimble doubling, then Mancini doubling right after him to bring him home. But Smith does a good job to minimize the damage there. And then the bats started to come alive in the top of the third. Braden Martin reached on an error by the first baseman. What's his name? Steinberg. It's just a weird play. It took a weird hop on him. But hey, weird hops are helpful to some and not to others. And thankfully, this one was a helpful one for Maryland. And then Honar comes through with a big two-out knock to score Eddie. Terps take the lead 2-1. And Smith runs into a bit of trouble in the third. And gives up a couple runs. And then in the fourth, Kenny Lippman, again, struggles, gives up the run on the Dooley double. And then you're like, well, how is Maryland going to get back in this game? Top of the fifth comes Chris Hakopian at the plate. He's so good.
So good.
Griffin Madden was on the mound for the Dukes. I believe he's a freshman. Gets Martin to ground out, and then his first pitch to Chris, I think he might have like slipped a little bit on the mound or something. Something was funky in his release, and it was a middle-middle pitch that Chris Hakopian did what he does to middle-middle pitches more often than not.
Boom!
Goodbye. It landed on a dirt road or gravel road and then bounced into somebody's backyard. Absolutely obliterated by Chris Hakopian. And that clearly rattled Madden a little bit, which is what you want to do as an offense. You know, you want to get these pitchers rattled a bit. So then Honar walked. Keister walked, which, by the way, that Keister walk now puts him in a tie for fourth on the Maryland baseball all-time walk list. It got him out of a tie for fifth. Do you want to know who was in a tie for fifth with him?
I'm going to say it was my last pick in the all-time Maryland baseball draft, Matt Swope.
It was indeed Matt Swope, who he broke the tie with. And Swope joked about it afterwards, how he's sick of all these kids breaking his records, and they have more at-bats than he did and whatever.
But it's definitely a fair argument. It absolutely is 100%. Is a fair argument.
But whatever.
Swope didn't have motor preferences back in 2002. Let's get that straight. He didn't have what these guys have now, that's for sure.
But yeah, so Keister walks, Orr pops out, and then Michael Iannazzo steps to the plate.
Big Mike.
Michael Iannazzo, he didn't homer in high school. He did not have a single homer for his high school team. He homered a couple times for his travel team. Never homered for his high school team. Maybe one of the last guys other than like Braden Martin you'd expect to hit a homer in this lineup. And what do you know? Three-run homer to take the lead on the first pitch.
And he didn't just sneak this one out. It got out. Over the fence.
It got out. It got over the bullpen. And the dugout was just so excited for him. I think the coaches had to like hold them back from coming out and running onto the field of play. But it was so exciting. And you're so happy for Mike, who's really had to wait his turn, has gotten an opportunity to play now at third. But yeah, just again, so happy for him, and he's made the most of his opportunity, and that's what you got to do in college baseball. When your opportunities come up to play, make the most of them, and that's how you keep playing. Nothing's handed to you, and Michael Iannazzo is given an opportunity, and he has more than made the most of it, and especially did on Tuesday, and just such an awesome moment. Two outs, there was a runner on first and second, and you really wanted to score at least one more in this inning after the Hakopian homer to tie the game. Why not score three more? And again, just so happy for Mike. Good kid, great guy to be around, and had a really nice stretch lately for Maryland.
Yeah, Maryland doesn't win this game without that home run. It's that simple, because that was the last score of the game. It was 4-3, or rather 4-3. Yeah, going into Iannazzo's at bat, and then he hits that three-run homer to make it 6-4, and that was the final score. So not only does Iannazzo come up clutch, but so does Logan Barrier, man. Well, I mean, my goodness.
Before we get to Barrier, we got to talk about Kenny. 3 2/3, 2 hits, 1 run, only 1 walk, which is huge after he walked 4 against Nebraska and 4 strikeouts. He came in the third where I think there were like runners on the corners, maybe on second and third. 2 straight strikeouts, you know, see you later. So credit to Kenny for having a really, really, really nice outing, picking up his second win of the year. But then Logan Barrier, I think that was his best outing of the year. He was unbelievable. Faced only 9 batters, gave up 1 hit, but then that hit. Unfortunately, we won't have highlights of this one due to some computer issues. But
boo your computer.
Yeah, boo my computer. But I think I said, I forget who was batting. Let me get this exactly right. It was Steinberg at the plate as the 9-hole hitter. So it was 8-9-1 due up. Kyle Langley leads off with a single. Steinberg's on deck, and I said, all right, you really want to get a double play here because you're going to have to face Dooley no matter what. You don't want to face Trimble. And sure enough, I think like 2 pitches later, 4-6-3, Taylor made, see you later. So credit to Logan for getting that ground ball. Other than that, he was unhittable. He was so good on Tuesday. I don't even have words to describe how lights out he was, which is good for him because he struggled in his outing against Northwestern, was good against Delaware in the 2 batters he faced, but his last extended outing was that one against Northwestern where he struggled on Friday. He was so good.
Yeah.
You run out of words to describe how good he was, how good he's been this year, but especially on Tuesday, man, he was lights out.
Yeah, the arm was fresh. He didn't pitch all weekend in Lincoln, and I was expecting him to pitch multiple times in that series, but it just didn't work out that way with the game being the way it was on Friday, and then the blowout on both Saturday and Sunday. Of course, they're going their respective ways, but it just there was never a perfect time for Barrier to get in over the weekend, and the opportunity presented itself against James Madison on Tuesday, and he made the most of it. Did you mention, Jack, faced the minimum and was able to retire all of the batters he faced other than that one single to Langley, but of course that was immediately negated by the double play. Terps come out on top 6-4, 6 runs on 9 hits, no errors for the Terps, cleaning up that defense after the 4 official errors on Sunday, and then 4 runs on 8 hits with the 1 error for James Madison. That 1 error really did come back to bite them a little bit. The 2 unearned runs for Chase Husted, right?
Husted,
my bad.
All good.
And that was in the 3rd inning. So really the difference in the game right there for JMU. They fall to 24-16. Terps improved to 26-16. And now they head into this weekend series facing the top team in the conference. Do you have any guesses, Jack?
What, like who the
Illinois?
I knew we were playing Illinois. I don't know why you asked me any guesses, but okay.
I don't know, but I guess I meant it in more of a frame of at this point in the year, could you have guessed?
No one expected
Illinois would be the top team in the conference. So
now, their schedule. We don't want to invalidate what they've done because they've had a really good start to Big Ten play. At Indiana, it's a tough series to open up with. They take 2 out of 3. Home against Penn State, they sweep. At Minnesota, they take 2 out of 3. Home against Northwestern, they sweep. They're not playing the world beaters of the Big Ten. So this is a team that's, you know, just because they're top of the Big Ten, they're 10-2 in conference, it's not act like they're, you know, this unbelievable team that Maryland can't touch. This is a team they can beat. They lost to Southern Indiana on a Sunday. They got smoked. Tennessee's really good, but they got smoked by Tennessee. In a weekend series there in Knoxville. They lost the Saturday game 24-1.
Whoa.
They had a really terrible non-conference. They played a tough schedule, don't get me wrong, but they had a terrible non-conference season. They played a tournament at Coastal. They lost to Coastal, lost to Cincinnati, and lost to Ball State. So they had a tough non-con, but boy, they've been really good in conference play. But again, you know, I don't want to give the illusion that they're not beatable. This is a team they can beat, 100%.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you look at, as you said, the schedule, and it doesn't scream anything all that exciting for Illinois, and let's be real with that. I mean, of course, you can't say anything about Northwestern because we lost 2-3 to Northwestern.
Yeah, obviously.
That Northwestern is still the worst team in the Big Ten. And it was just a rough weekend for the Terps on the road. But when you look at it overall, this is definitely a team that Maryland can take 2 or 3 against. And frankly, I think they need to take 2 or 3. It's
100%.
A must-win 2 or 3 series for the Terps because right now you're 3 games below .500 in Big Ten play, 6 wins, 9 losses. 9 games left. If you can take 6 of those 9 games and improve to 12-12, at the end of the regular season, I think that's good enough to get you into the Big Ten tournament.
Especially with the way the Big Ten's shaping out this year with so many teams so good at the top, that gets you in 100%.
And I think you need to go 2 or 3 against Illinois. You take 1 against Rutgers.
I think they can take 2 against Rutgers.
Of course you want to. Ideally, the scenario is you take 2 or 3 each weekend, and that gets you to 12-12. But if you only take 1 against Rutgers on the road. Rutgers is a good team. RPI is top 50 right now, even though the Big Ten record doesn't indicate that. Then you have Penn State at home for the last 3 games, and that's definitely a series where Maryland could sweep, especially if a team that's played a lot of close games this year needs to buckle down and get 3 clutch wins to get into the tournament. I think this team is battle-tested enough to where they could do that, but it all starts this weekend against Illinois. If you can set the tone, you're playing a Big Ten Network game on Friday. The eyes will be on you, and the eyes are going to be on Illinois. Everybody's going into this Friday night thinking that Illinois is going to throw out their best pitcher, and they're going to dominate against this hot and cold Maryland lineup. But if you can win this game on Friday night, beat the ace for the Fighting Illini, set the tone for the series, and really just punch them in the mouth, that could really just create a domino effect to not only Saturday and Sunday this weekend, but to what Maryland could do the rest of the season.
First off, before I, you know, say anything more, pack the Bob. Please
need it.
Pack. I think Saturday is going to be the most attended game of the year with Maryland Day. But come out Friday and Sunday as well. Pack the dang Bob. Let's go. Come on.
Regional style, man. Let's get after
Biggest
it.
Biggest series of the year. Let's go. Let's get to the Bob. We love the
warm weather. Warm weather. No excuse. It's not cold.
I mean, the excuse if you're far away from Maryland, but
no, not an excuse. Not an excuse.
My parents are coming down for Saturday. They'll be there.
Let's go. I met your mom once, I think.
Really?
Yeah. I think honestly it was like I was walking from lot one to Tizer for football.
I'm sure she was there for
It was like the terp walk and you were like right there with the band.
Sense.
Yeah.
Yep. My mom's great. Shout out to my mom.
Yes, shout out Jack's mom.
Pack the Bob. We've said it multiple times. Pack the dang Bob. And also pack the Maryland Dairy. Well, it's not coming out in time, but yesterday at the Maryland Dairy, we believe to be helmet bowls given out by Coach Swope. So if you are in the, well, you obviously won't hear this, but hopefully you got your helmet bowl from the Maryland Dairy.
Yeah. If you happen to be stopping by Stamp on Thursday and didn't get a Maryland helmet,
I'm sorry.
I am sorry. Because we were there.
Yep.
And hopefully, as we're recording this on Wednesday,
we will be there.
Hopefully we get ours.
So we were there, past tense us, we were there. I want multiple of them. But yeah, big series this week. No two ways around it, but let's go. I'm ready to see a doubted Maryland team.
Yeah. There's no expectations around this team right now. Everybody thinks they're going to collapse and fall into the bottom five of the Big Ten, but all this team has to do is get into those top eight and make the trip to Omaha in that third week of May, and anything can happen, as we saw last year.
Yep.
Anything can happen, and the pitching staff is much deeper this year than it was to last year. Of course, the lineup is not as potent, but
never know.
This Maryland team,
the lineup didn't mash in the tournament last year.
Exactly. That's what I was getting at. Like, the team didn't hit home runs in the tournament last year, and they found ways to win games. Maryland's been doing that all season long. So,
you ready for the Jack Suzanne and Bold prediction of the weekend?
Sure, let's hear it.
Colarco's going yard. He has not homered since March 10th, which is shocking. He's going yard this week. I'm feeling it. I got that feeling in me. Colarco, home run this week. Book it.
All right. Now I feel obligated to give my bold prediction.
We haven't kept track of my predictions. They're probably all...
We'll have to go back and listen at the end of the year.
That.
Let me think of one real quick.
Terp sweep.
I'll let that be your 1B.
Okay.
Two Kevin Keister home runs this
weekend. Wow. I like that.
Yeah. Two Kevin Keister home runs. He was actually we were at practice earlier, and he was talking with assistant coach Tommy Gardner saying, we should have played more games at home this year. And I think that's a sign that he loves hitting the ball with the Bob, and he'll be seeing the ball well this weekend. He's breaking out of a little bit of a slump over the last couple of weeks, so hopefully Kevin can live up to my prediction and lead the Terps to a series sweep with two home runs.
Beautiful. Let's do it.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for all the coverage we provide of the Dirty Terps. Tyler Lochte and Jack Bowman will be on the call Friday. Ben Strober and Dash Tischler will be on the call Saturday, and then myself and Daniel Stein will be with you on Sunday for Game 3. But until then, this is Jack and Nathan signing off for Episode 104. We'll come to you next week with Episode 105. Take care.